Welcome to the very first episode of Murph's Turf, a Star Trek Prodigy podcast. My name is Brent, and I am super, super excited to be here today talking all things Star Trek Prodigy, the newest entry into the Star Trek universe. And I got to tell you guys, I am really excited to be here. I'm very excited for several reasons. One of those is I am a longtime Star Trek fan. You can call me a Trekkie. You can call me a Trekker. I don't really care. If you love Star Trek in any capacity, you and I are friends. I love Star Trek. I love all things Star Trek. And I also love podcasting. That's another reason why I'm excited to be here. I love podcasting. I've been podcasting now for almost 8 years. I've had several podcasts out there covering things from NFL sports to movies to television shows, short stories, creative events, and even another Star Trek podcast that is still currently going on. Some of those projects never saw the light of day because they were better as ideas than in reality. Some of them were kind of under the radar, shall we say. Some of them weren't that good, especially in the early years. And then I've had some that honestly were pretty successful. But I got to tell you, the thing I've loved about podcasting over the years is it has always opened doors and allowed me to meet so many interesting people, to make so many new friends. And mostly those friends are you guys, the listeners, the community that somehow develops interestingly around a show and around a podcast. And I can't wait to get to see and meet those of you that will join around this particular podcast. That's super, super exciting to me. But perhaps the reason I am most excited for this particular podcast, for this particular show, yes, I love the fact of doing podcast. Yes, I love Star Trek. But what I really love more is I love who my co-host is going to be with me on this journey. He's a person that I am particularly fond of. He's relatively new to both Star Trek and podcasting, but because he's been around me for literally his entire life, he has sort of always been around the two as well. But now he's taken his own interest in both Star Trek and podcasting, so I couldn't be happier to launch this brand new project with him. I'm talking about my son, Jude. Jude, let me be the first to welcome you to the world of podcasting, to the universe of Star Trek. Jude, let me ask you this. Why did you want to do this podcast?
Because you've always been doing it, and I've always wanted to be a part of it with you.
But why this show? Why Star Trek Prodigy? Like, what was it about this show that you're like, this is the one we're going to do a podcast about? This is the opportunity to get to do one.
I don't know. Maybe because I just like this Star Trek show.
Interesting. Do you tell me, well, I know what the answer is. Why don't you tell the people out there who are listening, what has been your history with Star Trek? Like, you know, your dad likes Star Trek a lot. Your dad watches a lot of Star Trek, but what have you done? Like to let them know where you have kind of like gone, oh gosh, dad watching Star Trek again, or like what has it been for you growing up in a house with a guy who's a just a big old nerd?
Really, the only reason you always turn on Star Trek, and I'd always go to bed watching that.
Yeah, you weren't ever really into it that much, though, were you?
No, as much as I've watched is like 2 episodes of The Next Generation.
Yeah.
In the first season.
Yeah, you always liked the Borg. You always thought the Borg were pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's about it, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but a new show is out, Jude. A brand new show. A show that is meant for people like you. I don't know if you realize that or not. Like, Prodigy was designed for people like you. It's meant for kids. And so we're going to be talking about Star Trek Prodigy because it's really meant for kids like you who don't know much about Star Trek. They don't know much about the fandom of Star Trek. And it's kind of meant to be like, hey, here's a show for you. You feel like this is an old show maybe for your mom, your dad. You know, here's one that's for you, but it's in the Star Trek universe. And it's something that you can kind of grab onto and you can sort of, I guess, call your own. So Jude, you've watched this first episode, and without giving out anyway any secrets or surprises of the story, did you enjoy Prodigy?
I did.
You liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In fact, we've already, how many times have we watched it now?
We should have only watched it 2, but because of my sister, 3. Because
she got into it as well. She comes up, she's like, I want to watch that show you guys were watching the other day. Yeah, so I think Prodigy is doing exactly what it's meant to do. It's really appealing to kids, and it's bringing kids in and giving them their own show that they can watch and that they can latch on to. that's a part of the Star Trek universe. In fact, your sister was going, ah, Dad, this is Star Trek. But she kept watching. Right?
Yeah.
Jude, I got to tell you, though, when I was watching Prodigy, I've been very excited for the show. I like pretty much all Star Trek. That doesn't mean that I love every episode that comes out or that I don't have some things that are more favorites than others. I certainly do. But I was very excited for the show, and I'm watching it. And for somebody who's a longtime Star Trek fan, I got to tell you, Jude, there was a lot in it for me, too. And there was a lot that I loved as a longtime Star Trek person. You know, and I love animation. I love cartoons and stuff like that. But I'm an adult. I really prefer more usually the live action type stuff.
Like Next Generation.
Yeah, like
Enterprise and Deep Space Nine, Voyager.
Discovery and Picard. And I love all of those. But not just that, just in general. The types of shows and movies I like to watch are live action, not usually animated. Although I do like the animated stuff as well. So, Jude, one of the cool things about this podcast that actually has me excited for a podcast about this show that is me and you is we're going to get to talk about Prodigy through my perspective as just some old fogey that goes all the way back, you know?
Yeah.
But we're also going to get to talk about your perspective as somebody who is actually the target audience for this show. Huh? And is of that age. You're the person that this show is made for. They're making the show for you, not for me. But they're putting a lot of stuff in there for people like me too.
Yeah.
You know? So we're going to get to hear both. So Jude, I am going to be the Hollow Janeway to your Murph.
What?
I am going to be your guide along this journey. You're going to be Murph. I'm going to be Hollow Janeway. We're going to be a team. We're going to be a partners as we go through this. All right. With that, let me just say this to everybody out there listening. Fair warning. From this point forward, this is a spoiler-filled podcast. We are going to be talking about all things that happened in this week's episode of Star Trek Prodigy. In this case, it was the two-part premiere episode, Lost and Found. So final warning, from this point forward, spoilers abound, and we will not be holding anything back.
What does abound mean?
It means there will be lots of them.
Oh.
All right, Jude, let's talk about Star Trek Prodigy episodes 1 and 2, Lost and Found. A quick recap of the episode. A ragtag group of young kids are imprisoned on the Tars Lamora prison mining colony by the evil Diviner and his robot horde led by their chief bot, Dreadnought, and the Diviner's not-so-evil daughter, Gwen. When suddenly the cunning Dara RL and his work partner, Rock-Tok, discover a hidden ship in the mine. When they turn it on, they suddenly can understand each other. And now they're on a mission to recruit the necessary people to mount an escape from Tars Lamora. So cue Jenkum Pog as an engineer and Fugitive Zero as pilot. And even the lovable gelatinous Murph, who I'm not sure what he's, maybe he's the weapons officer. I don't know. But along with Gwen being held hostage in a pew 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 battle, they escape the colony. Without a clue as to what to do next, they activate the ship's training hologram, Janeway, which will show them the way into the next episode. All right, Jude, my young progeny, how did you like this episode?
I thought it was great.
What about it did you think was great? Tell me about some of your favorite moments from the show.
I really liked the elevator where it was going down kind of slow and then it told him to grab on. It and stopped.
Dar-El couldn't reach. He was too short to reach it.
And then it just fell. And then the time when...
Wait. But it goes all the way down to the bottom and then it stops, but it stops like just a little bit short of the bottom. Yeah. So it goes all the way down, it stops, and then it falls just a little bit more right after. It was great.
Yeah. Another one was Rock-Tok's voice. It was so like, is Rock-Tok young or what?
Yeah, I don't think that we understood watching the first part of the episode that most everybody is supposed to be a kid. You know what I mean? Or at least like a teenager, you know, like a young person. Because we look at Rock-Tok, like to see Rock-Tok at first. First of all, you're almost positive Rock-Tok's a dude.
Yeah.
Right? And it's this bit, I mean, you hear this deep, low, growling sound coming out of his mouth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, when we can understand him, what we understand is, oh, Rock-Tok's a kid. And Rock-Tok's not a dude, it's a girl. Or at least we assume it's a girl. Like, Rock-Tok's a girl. you know? So, it flips the script. And to see that little tiny voice coming out of this big creature, oh, it's great. It was so good. So good. And there was a change in the way they did Rock Talk's eyes from that point forward. Like, there's just something when you look into Rock Talk, that Rock Talk goes from this big, scary rock monster. I want a Rock Talk, like, stuffed animal.
Yes.
Like, I want to hug Rock Talk. You know what I mean? Like, Rock Talk might be my favorite. Like, I love Rock Talk.
And what was that goo when, like, knocked, like, the chest plate off of him?
You know, I have that same question. I don't know what that was. Because he's like, oh, you're goop. You left your goop. Like, I don't know if that was supposed to be sweat or blood, or did she spill something on herself? Like, I don't know what that was. I don't think they ever explained it. Let's mark that down as a question that we have going forward. A segment we'll get to later on in the show. What else?
Okay.
What else were some of your favorite moments in this episode?
Pew, pew, pew. Pew, pew, pew.
Hit the pew, pew, pew button. I don't see a pew, pew, pew button. Hit them all until they go pew, pew.
And then Murph just drops from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
How did he activate the button?
You know, Jude, I think there's going to be a lot about Murph that we just go, how did Murph do that?
Yeah.
I think we're going to see that a lot over the course of this show.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like just sort of a running gag, like a running joke throughout the whole show. That, wait, how did Murph do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those were my favorite moments. What were yours?
Well, I loved, and we saw this in previews. I don't know if you ever actually got to see the preview, but I loved the moment when they get on the ship and that Rock Talk pushes the button, the little comm badge button, so Jude, that symbol, the Star Trek symbol that kind of looks like a triangle, like a little messed up triangle, that's called Delta. Okay. So if you ever hear us talking about the Star Trek Delta, that's what we're talking about.
Oh, wait, okay? Is that the symbol for Star Trek?
It is. Yeah. It's the symbol. It's on their comm badges. For those of you listening out there, I've got a whole thing of Star Trek behind me. It's everything that has to do with Star Trek. So anyway, that's called the Delta. So he finds the button, or she, I'm sorry, finds the button that looks like that. She pushes the button and then it just goes through the sequence of everything lighting up on the ship and the ship is turning on. It's just such a cool moment. And then the lights come on underneath it's such a money, what I guess they kind of call like a money shot moment. Like, yeah, it's just a cool moment. You want to put that's a moment you want to show everybody.
Yeah.
Is the ship turning on. I loved when Dal was trying to like send Zero a message through his mind.
Yeah.
And he's doing all the weird facial movements. Like, that was so funny.
Yeah.
He's just, I'm not sure why he needed to do facial movements to.
Because they said it when they were about to get captured, trying to persuade or something.
Yeah.
Just Zero didn't agree with his plan.
Yeah.
Just simply was ignoring him.
Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden he starts making the facial. It's, I always think that's one of those things like when, you know, like you get two people who maybe don't speak the same language.
Yeah.
And so the one person who's really obnoxious just starts trying to say the same thing. They just do it louder.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, I don't understand you. You can say it as loud as you want. I don't it's like, do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
No, I do not.
Exactly. You can say it louder. I'm not deaf. You know, actually something I thought was really cool. I'm surprised you didn't have it on your list because I thought you would love this thing. The weapon that was on Gwen's arm, you know, that like, it was like a shoulder decoration piece. And all of a sudden it melts down her arm and turns into a sword.
Oh yeah.
And then it flies up the side of her arm and goes off the other side and turns into something else on, like a two-handed dagger or something.
A lance.
Yeah. Like that was just super cool, man.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. That is something, well, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. Because there's questions I think that we have to have about this show.
So are we going to go to things we've learned or are we still at favorite moments?
I'll give you one more favorite moment.
Okay.
The moment that they went pew, pew, pew and the phasers lit up. I loved the pew, pew, pew moment. It was hilarious. Right.
Yeah.
But when they actually pushed, or when Murph pushed the button or sat on the button, whatever it was that he did.
Yeah.
But then we see the phaser start firing outside the starship. I was just, for especially for me as like an old Trekkie, I was like, oh, there's phasers. Phasers are awesome. They're so cool.
I thought phasers were handheld weapons that like.
Oh, they can be, but they can also be on the ship too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, do they have like missiles or something?
They have torpedoes, yes. Yes, photon torpedoes. They absolutely do. You know, and then I guess as another hero moment, speaking of the ship, when they first turn on the ship and like it comes over the, like you think it's just fallen off the ledge. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it just rises up out of the ashes.
Yeah,
and then
like
it
that.
Goes through the waterfall like a second later. So cool. So yeah. Cool.
And yeah. The fact that they didn't let him in.
So, Jude, before we go on to the next piece, can I talk to you for a second as sort of an old-time Star Trek nerd?
Sure.
All right. So, you know, we mentioned that this show is meant for people like you.
Yeah.
Okay. But there was a lot in this show for people like me. And can I tell you some of the things that, as an old-time Trekkie, I picked up on?
What?
That you probably didn't. I've got a list of a few of them here. One, the show starts off with them not, they're on the prison colony. They're not able to talk to each other, right? Because yeah. They all speak different languages, right? Mm-hmm. And he says, oh, there's no translator because they outlawed them. They didn't want them speaking to each other, which is fine. The idea of a translator is actually that's an old idea in Star Trek. Like goes all the way back to the first episode.
Really?
Well, think about it. If they're out there flying around meeting all these different aliens, does everybody speak English?
No.
So how are they going to understand each other?
I don't know.
Well, you get a device that translates and makes, and the idea is instead of having like another person, you say it and then it says it back to you in your regular language. It literally like just makes your voice sound like what it's saying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so the idea that they didn't have a translator and then they brought that in, and the translators used to be like a handheld device way back in the beginning. Almost looked like a little flip phone, okay?
It's a flip phone.
Something that looked like this. This child is so young, he doesn't know what a flip phone is, folks. It's what we had before iPhones, Jude, where the top actually flipped down, and then you had to flip it up, and you go, hello, hello, and then you turn it off by flipping it down.
Isn't there like a new flip phone that's like really nice?
Yeah, apparently we're not here to talk about flip phones.
Okay.
But this used to be the old translator. Okay.
Okay.
Then when they got to Next Generation, they made it the little badge that sits on their chest.
Oh, and
that's why they touch it all the time. And it's a communicator. It's also their translator. It became that, right? Yeah. So that's why, like, when they had it in their hand, they're like, oh, wait, how can I understand you? And they showed them, like, the little thing. That is the universal, that they call, it's called a universal translator, Jude.
Which means if they have an alien that they've never seen before, that they can just click the button and it'll speak their language?
Generally speaking, sometimes because it's a part of the plot of the story, the universal translator has trouble with it. But for the most part, yeah, they just get to start talking. One of the other things, and actually, I don't know if this is more of a question that I have going forward or what, but on the prison colony,
mm-hmm.
And this isn't a criticism. It's going to come off as a criticism. It's really not. There was a lot of robots that they were using, you know?
Okay.
They don't use robots. We haven't seen them use robots like that in Star Trek really before. Like that's a more Star Wars kind of thing,
yeah,
where they use robots to go out and do stuff. We haven't really seen that in Star Trek before. Now, what we have seen in Star Trek, we've certainly seen robots in Star Trek before. Yeah. Data was a robot.
Wait, you really?
Know? Yes. Well, he's an android, but still, that's a robot.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We've seen things called exocomps in Next Generation, which are little robot guys that became sentient and could operate. But we've never seen them operating like they have on this particular planet. And this really had more of a Star Wars feel. So I'm interested to see where these robots came from and how they fit into a bigger story. Or if they're just going to be like, yeah, that's what they do over in that part of the galaxy. Like, I don't know where they're going to go with it. I'll be good either way. I just hope they address it and don't just let it go. Because it is very Star Warsian as they go. All right. The other one I want to give you, the bounty hunter. Remember at the beginning when we first met Gwen and they came out and they got that little cat girl?
Yeah.
The bounty hunter, the guy that was selling her, they called him a Kazon. The Kazon were the first bad guys of Star Trek Voyager.
Huh?
Yeah. So we've met the Kazon before. We actually haven't really seen the Kazon since Voyager. And that probably, and I'm almost, it almost certainly, because they've said it a few other times, sets the show in something called the Delta Quadrant. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I thought that it was like a it's like what Worf is.
A Klingon?
Yeah,
Klingon. You thought it was a Klingon. It wasn't a Klingon. It was something called a Kazon. Okay? Now, something...
Is it like their cousin?
Nope. Completely different. So, Jude, something you should know is the way that they have separated the galaxy, the Milky Way, okay, in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Is they've separated it into four quadrants. Quad means four, right? Four mm-hmm. quadrants, four areas. Earth is in something called the Alpha Quadrant. You have the Alpha Quadrant, Beta Quadrant, Gamma Quadrant, and Delta Quadrant.
Okay? Have they gone farther?
That's A, B, C, D. Possibly, depending on which episode you're watching, and they hadn't really established all that. But anyway, these quadrants are super far apart, okay?
What's in between them?
Do what?
What's in between them?
Well, at some point, they all sort of come together, right? Because it's like wedges of a pie, okay?
Oh.
Now Earth is really, really close to the border between the Alpha and Beta quadrant. So when we're talking about normal Star Trek stuff, the Klingons, the Vulcans, Earth, something called the Cardassians, all of that, those are happening in the Alpha and Beta quadrants in a section. All right. The Federation. You know what the Federation is, yeah? No? You're going to learn what the Federation is in an upcoming episode of Star Trek Prodigy, so I'm not going to explain it right now, okay? But most of Star Trek and what we see of Star Trek happens in this little area, all right? Deep Space Nine found a way to get to the Gamma Quadrant through something called a wormhole, which was about 70,000 light years away, which means it would take you about 70 years to get there if you just traveled by regular ship, okay?
Like, by, like, regular ship, like, today?
No, like, regular ship in Star Trek time.
Oh crap. Yeah. Like okay. Going at like
it takes a yeah, going full speed 70 years to get you're not getting there in a lifetime is what is basically the idea. So the idea being, can the people in the Gamma Quadrant or that part of the Gamma Quadrant, are they really going to come and affect what we're doing in the Alpha and Beta Quadrant?
No.
Not unless they come through the wormhole, okay? The story of Voyager, just so you know, is they actually get shot all the way to the other end of the Delta Quadrant and they don't have a way to get home. They don't have a wormhole. So they just have to, it's going to take them 70 years to get home. And that's the story of Voyager is how do they get home? Okay. That's the whole show is Voyager.
Do they ever stop at Deep Space Nine?
Nope. They do on their way out before they get there. Okay. But it was an accident. It was an alien that brought them all the way over to that part of the galaxy. Okay. So anyway, my point in bringing all of that up is the Kazon are way the heck out there in the Delta Quadrant. They're never going to affect us down here. So this show must be set somewhere up around the Delta Quadrant, pretty far away from space. You know what I mean? Like pretty far away, which might explain why Janeway is the hologram. We'll talk about that later.
Oh!
Might explain why Janeway is the hologram.
But then here. How did that ship get out there if it's not?
That's a great question. Let's talk about that in a few minutes, okay? So, but anyway, we recognize the Kazon bounty hunter. One of the other things we noticed, let's talk about some species from the Alpha Quadrant that we know. So these are way out there in the Delta Quadrant. Why would we find Alpha and Beta Quadrant species over there? That's weird. That is weird, and I hope they answer that. A couple of the species we found out there at the prison colony. Remember that little cat girl that the Kazon bounty hunter brought?
Mm-hmm.
She's called a Kation. That's an Alpha Quadrant species. We've seen a few of those throughout Star Trek in history. If you've ever watched Lower Decks, you've watched Lower Decks with me a few times, right? The doctor that's a cat?
Yeah.
That's her species.
Oh.
Yeah, and they had one in a movie and stuff too. So anyway, that's a Kation. The other one, Zero, Fugitive Zero, the little guy. Yeah. They said, you know, he's non-corporeal. He doesn't have a body. So he had to build this like a little robot body.
Not a
body.
He or a she?
Yeah, it's not
how,
a he or a
how
she.
How the heck did he build it without hands?
That's a good question. That's why he's like, I'm rather impressed with myself. Anyway, that little fuzzy thing, that was from an episode of the original series way back in the 60s, like a long time ago.
What fuzzy thing?
Not fuzzy thing, like the little glowy thing, like inside, like if you looked inside the eye of the robot.
Yeah.
The thing floating in there, that's him. That's the actual alien.
Oh.
He just built this robot body. Okay. So the Medusans from the Alpha Quadrant, the Kations from the Alpha Quadrant, also from the Alpha Quadrant, Jankum Pog is a Tellarite. Okay. Remember the engineer, the guy that likes to argue all the time? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the Tellarites, Jude, and this is important. I want you to remember this, even though you don't know what I'm getting ready to say. The Tellarites were one of the original members of the Federation when it was founded. You're looking at me going, what are you talking about? So it's a big question to me. Why is a Tellarite out in the Delta Quadrant on this colony?
How do you know we're in the Delta Quadrant?
Well, that's what I was just, because of the use of the Kazon, that tells me we might be out. We might be out in the Delta Quadrant. He also said, they said some point in the show, something, something, the finest, something this side of the Delta Quadrant. So I assume this means that we're in the Delta Quadrant. And just the question, I think it begs the question, why are these Alpha Quadrant people out in the Delta Quadrant? There's another one. One of the they kind of showed this in the scene where they were, where the diviner was using Zero to like put people into like a mind trance or something.
Yeah, how does that happen?
The Medusans can do crazy stuff with people's mind because they're telepathic. But one of the creatures they did that is a creature called a Lorian, which is a creature that we know in the form of Morn from Deep Space Nine. And we've also seen them now in Discovery as well.
Morn,
he was a side character on Deep Space Nine that sat at the bar all the time. But he had a very specific look, but that was one of them. So we might not actually be in the Alpha or the Delta Quadrant, but it's possible we could be. I'm not sure. Oh, that's my point. We're seeing all these different species, and there's a lot of new species we've never known. Like, we don't know what Dalar-El is. We don't know what Rock Talk is. We've never seen her. Don't know what Murph is.
A Goron.
A Goron from Zelda. we don't really, like, we know Gwyn and her father, they're Von Arcutz or something like that. Whatever their species is, I don't think we've ever seen them before. So there's a lot of new species, but there are definitely some familiar species here that kind of make me go, what's going on? So another reference, remember when, I want to say it was Gwyn was talking to Dal and she said, hey, you remember talking about that cluster of stars? And he's like, yeah, you mean the window of dreams?
Yeah.
That's a reference to something from an old Voyager episode. I know, right? It was just something that I would have noticed that you never noticed. But it's just a reference to a cluster of stars, which also, again, makes me think that this happens in the Delta Quadrant. So my suspicion is this series is happening in the Delta Quadrant, but somehow we've been getting these species from all over that have come here. And then you have to ask the question, how are they getting these species from all over? One of the things, the protostar. So all starships have something called a registry number, Jude. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The Enterprise's registry number was NCC-1701. All right. They all have a registry number on them.
What the heck?
Voyager's registry number is NCC-74656. All right.
See it? I thought Voyager was this.
Voyager's the name of the ship. Okay.
Okay.
But that's what they call their registry number. The registry number on the protostar. So the protostar is the name of the ship, right?
Yeah.
The registry on the protostar is not NCC. It's an NX.
Huh?
Now, the last time we saw something called an NX was during a series called Enterprise, which was about the very first starship named Enterprise. And that registry number was NX-01, which means that it was the X means an experimental ship, not a ship that, like, so the protostar, what that tells me is the protostar is an experimental ship. It's a ship they're trying out. It's not a ship that exists, like, that's being used a lot throughout the rest of Starfleet. It's a ship they're just sort of trying out. It's a prototype ship.
Oh, okay. So that's where the protostar comes in.
Well, the protostar, yeah, the protostar is definitely the name of the thing. So that's why we probably have never seen hologram Janeway before on anything. That might be that hologram is an experiment. We'll find out. So, and then obviously, yes.
Maybe it was like a training exercise and like it's for like crews, and like maybe one screwed up a lot and maybe found herself through the wormhole.
Yeah.
And crashed into that one like little planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got trapped there. And were those diamonds like the kind of diamonds that like power the starships?
Yeah, that's a great question. When they went through and they found all those crystals, I said to you at some point, I said, I thought those were dilithium crystals.
What are dilithium?
Dilithium crystals is what powers starships.
Oh.
Very, very important. And it plays in very important to the latest season of Discovery, of Star Trek Discovery, when almost all the dilithium crystals throughout the galaxy have been obliterated, gone away.
Why?
Well, you'll have to watch that show and find out. But dilithium is a very important concept in Star Trek because that is the fuel. That's the gas that powers the starships.
Do okay? they have to change it out like every like decade or something? Or?
They eventually do, but they actually have a little device in there called like a reconstitution chamber. Trekkie's out there going to kill me because I'm not thinking of the name off the top of my
Who's
head.
Trekkies,
people that watch Star Trek a lot. But anyway, there's a device in the warp chamber on the ship that actually takes the gas and then turns it back into gas you can use again. So basically the crystal never burns out is the idea. So the only time you ever have to actually replace the crystal is if like an accident happens and you use up all the crystal without it reforming. So, but anyway, we're getting way off topic here. Okay. I did think that it was dilithium crystal, but later they called it chimerium. Now I've never heard of chimerium before, but it does sound like chimera. Have we studied this yet in school? The ancient Greek mythology of the chimera, which is like a lion and an eagle and... So anyway, so chimerium has got to be something that probably has to do with fire. It's probably why it was red like that. So we'll see. We'll see what chimerium is. I think that's a question that we have as we go forward. But the last thing that I want to talk about is as a Trekkie, something that I noticed, and I can't get out of here without talking about that. Janeway, holographic Janeway. Now, we have seen in Star Trek before lots of holograms. Do you know what a hologram is?
No.
A hologram is basically a computer program that uses lights to make something look like it's really there, only it's not really there.
Like a projector?
Yeah, like exactly. In fact, holograms need holographic projectors to work.
Oh, that's where holographic comes in holograms.
So this Janeway was not a hologram. Janeway was an actual person.
Yeah.
In fact, and you know this probably just from watching Star Trek with me every once in a while. She was the captain of Voyager.
First female captain?
She wasn't the first female captain in Starfleet, but she was the first female captain to lead a show. Okay? Like we had seen well before Voyager other girls who were captains. Okay? They just weren't part of the show. Like we would just kind of meet them while we were out there. All right? But she's the first one who was ever lead in one of the shows. So, but remember... Janeway was in charge of Voyager. Voyager is the ship that went all the way to the Delta Quadrant and then had to spend 70 years getting home. It didn't take them 70 years. They found other ways to get home faster. So the idea that we have Janeway here, and what I love, Jude, and you don't know this, the character of Janeway is voiced by the same actress who played Janeway back on Voyager.
Really?
Yes, really. So that's all I had from what I'm going to call a segment called Trek or Not Trek. Just things that I, as an old Trekkie, would notice that you're like, huh. So now I can explain it to you. All right, Jude. So let me ask you this. We've watched this episode. We had a lot of fun with it. We've learned some stuff. Yeah. One of the things we learned is the show's set in the Delta Quadrant, and there's all these different aliens, okay. Or at least we think it is. We think it's set in the Delta Quadrant.
Maybe it's in a different quadrant that we have no idea exists.
Well, then it wouldn't be a quadrant. It'd be a pentrant, because there's only four quadrants. You can only have... Because quad means four, right?
Well,
so there's alpha, beta, gamma, delta. Like the known galaxy is only four quadrants, but maybe we're somewhere else. You could be right. Maybe we're somewhere else, and maybe we'll discover that. Maybe we're on the other side of the Delta Quadrant, like wherever that ends, just outside the Milky Way. Who knows? I don't know. But let's move forward, Jude. Here's the thing I have for you. As we look towards next week, as we look towards the rest of the series. What are some of the questions that we have going forward? What do we hope to see coming up in future episodes?
When Daryl was trying to escape the first time,
uh-huh.
And he was at the edge of the cliff, and he jumped on the thing with the crystals,
yep.
He fell. How did that not hurt him? Is he hurt, just he didn't tell anybody? Or what?
Okay.
And another thing is, why was the big guy, or why was the diviner looking for the ship when he already had so many other ships?
Yeah, that's true. I think that's a big question. That's going to be a big question about the show as we go forward, is why was he looking for the protostar? Because they said to us several times, like, the whole reason he's had all these people here mining is not really to get all the mine stuff out. They're all supposed to be looking for this ship. They don't know that that's what they're looking for, but that's what they're supposed to be looking for, right? And Gwen, like, whatever secret mission her father is hiding from her, like, a part of this was to find the ship. And when, at the end of the episode, when they fly away with the ship and they have Gwen, his daughter, as a hostage on the ship,
mm-hmm.
What does the diviner say? He doesn't say, bring me my daughter back. He says, bring me my ship. He's more concerned about the ship than he is his own daughter.
What the?
I know. That's messed up, which tells me, and it makes me wonder, is she really his daughter?
Maybe he's just your guardian?
Maybe. I don't know. I think those are really great questions, Jude. Really great questions. Any other questions you have going forward?
How did Daryl not fall off the ship with the waterfall?
Yeah, I had that same question. He's on the outside of the ship. They did not have the shields up yet.
No.
You know what I mean? And they're going through this waterfall. Waterfalls, that's a lot of water. It's really hard to maintain your grip and to hold on to stuff, right? So how did he not fall off? Like, that's some things I think we just have to go, it's an animated cartoon. It's just a TV show.
Yeah.
I think some things we have to do that. That and might be one of those things.
How did they have so much food for, like, thousands of aliens? And
yeah. How did the logistics of mining colony work?
How long have they been doing it? Why was the big boss and the type goo slime water mix thingy?
That's a great question. Why was the diviner in that water tank? Like, what's wrong with
him? Maybe because he's getting really old.
And it was keeping him alive?
Yeah.
Maybe. It was very Matrix-y. I know you've never seen The Matrix, but yeah, it was very, very Matrix-y.
Everybody's talking about The Matrix, and what is The Matrix?
It's a movie we'll watch sometime, Jude. You're old enough now. You can watch it. We should watch it. It's a good movie.
Is it a horror movie?
No. It's a good movie. I think a question that we have to ask is, we've kind of danced around it a lot already. How did the Protostar get out to the Delta Quadrant and then buried in that mine? You know, like, how did it get there? Maybe, and why is it still intact?
Maybe what you said, like, the same aliens that brought Voyager to the Delta Quadrant, maybe those guys took over the ship and couldn't control it, the ship, and so they just threw it on an asteroid or whatever that thing is.
That's an interesting thought, except that the aliens that brought Voyager to the Delta Quadrant the first time died. They don't exist anymore. Unless there's more of them that we knew about, which could be possible. So I guess it's possible. Whatever, it's called the Caretaker. They called him the Caretaker. Unless there's more caretakers out there that we just didn't know about.
Or maybe they took him through the wormhole before they took Voyager through.
All interesting thoughts. Let's wait and see. Any other questions you have going forward?
Yes. How did the diviner control the gravity on it? Like he pressed a button or something and everything just started to fall.
Yep. Well, they have to have artificial gravity out there in various places of space. So it's got to be a machine that they have for sure. I got a question. I want to know, are the robots alive like Data? Like, are they sentient like Data? Or are they all just part of a computer program controlled by the diviner?
Like Borg?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm real curious about that.
Yeah. Me too. And I have another one.
Yep.
It's like this asteroid is like a machine, because like when the diviner's daughter, or maybe daughter, like did something, made all the geysers blow up.
Yeah.
Maybe the diviner will like turn like or so, or make a ship that can go deep space and it'll follow the ship.
Yeah.
And it'll follow the them. But also, did they ever get their the things off that were on their ankles?
We did see those fall off at some point, so those are gone.
I only saw Daryl's.
Yeah. Well, now let's say his name correctly. It's Dal R.L.
Dal R.L.?
Dal is his first name. R.L. is his last name.
Okay, Dal.
Dal. Yeah, we just call him Dal. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Although I do think it's funny, they basically named him Daryl. I had that same thought. Here's a question about Daryl. Or Dal R.L., what species is he? They ask the question, and what species
changeling.
Are you?
Maybe he's a changeling, but he doesn't know it yet. Ooh. And he changed into...
whatever that purple thing is?
Yeah.
Oh, that's an interesting idea, Jude. That's an interesting... See, you wouldn't have got that if you hadn't watched a little bit of Star Trek with me. Okay, yeah. Could be a changeling. All right, Jude's fan theory right now. All right. I've got a question.
Yeah?
I want to know... We generally think we know where the show is, that it's in...
The Delta Quadrant?
The Delta Quadrant. But the question I have to know is, when is the show set? Now, I think it's safe to assume that the show is set after the events of Voyager, okay?
How would all be...
Because Janeway's on it, and they've turned Janeway into a hologram, and put her onto the ship and sent the ship back out. That's my assumption of what's happened with the Protostar, because they wouldn't have done that to Janeway before. Like, she was just a young captain. It was her first assignment when everything happened with Voyager. So they wouldn't have made a hologram out of her yet, most likely. So this is probably after they all get back. She's been to the Delta Quadrant. I think the Protostar is an experimental ship, probably meant to maybe its whole job was to fly to the Delta Quadrant and bring people back to the Alpha Quadrant, and it was going to show them how to operate there. I don't know. Maybe they were sending. Oh, you're not going to know what I mean. Maybe they were sending it after Neelix. Oh, they were going to go help people. Maybe Neelix's people were all about to die and their planet was about to blow up, and they sent it after them. And Janeway was there I don't know. Anyway, well.
Heck is Neelix?
Yeah, he's a character on. Listen, here's the thing. People out there listening who know who Neelix is would be like, oh, I know what he's talking about. People who don't will be like, why is he wasting his breath? But the other one that gets me, Jude, is I wonder if this show is not set way into the future. And I mean, like, way into the future. And the reason why I ask that is because of the weapon that Gwen has that we talked about. Like, it started off as an arm decoration, jewelry, yeah. And it melted down her hand and turned into a sword. And then all of a sudden it went up her body and it turned into a lance. And it changes. It's something called malleable matter, okay? It means it's something that we can change. We can change its shape.
Like what changelings are made out of?
Kind of, but... Changelings are organic. They're a thing.
Was Odo a changeling?
Odo was a changeling, but yeah.
He couldn't change really into anything.
Well, we'll talk about that later. That's not my point. My point being, though, Jude, there is a show of Star Trek where we see that it's set about 1,000 years into the future, beyond Voyager and all of that. And they...
Discovery?
Yeah, Discovery. And they have malleable matter, where things can change its shape and form as you need it to. So there's a question to me of going, is this show actually not really... pretty far into the future? And that's a question I have. I don't think it is. I think it's pretty close to Voyager's time, but it's something that makes me stop and ask the question.
Maybe that type of species that the diviner and his progeny,
yeah, or Gwen, yeah,
like
I do think it's funny he calls her progeny and the name of the show is Prodigy. Those are two different meanings of words, two different words that mean two different things, but they sound very similar.
Yeah, maybe their species. Their species already uh-huh. knew about that type of matter.
It could be.
And they were using it.
Mm-hmm.
And, ooh, maybe their species already had it like 1,000 years before Janeway.
Yeah.
And then that suddenly just crashed into it, like, after Janeway or something.
Could be.
I don't.
We'll see. Jude, all of that is stuff. That's the exciting part of the show, is what's going to happen next. Where is it going to go? What questions are going to get answered? What new questions are we going to have next week?
Yeah, I actually think, wait, are the Borg in all the quadrants?
As far as we know, I don't know that we've ever seen them in the Gamma Quadrant, but we haven't explored the Gamma Quadrant that much, just a little bit. I think we would assume. We'll find out. Save all of, yeah, go ahead.
And maybe they're going to run into the Borg.
Uh-huh.
And then, wait, isn't Voyager the one that, like, interacts with Borg the most?
They are.
And maybe then Janeway will have to guide them out and where to strike to destroy them?
It's possible. And, we'll have to see.
And also, I think the Diviner is going to follow them in the future.
Okay. I like it. All right, Jude. So here's the question. Well, actually, you just sort of answered it. What do you think is going to happen next week?
I think the Diviner is going to follow.
Yeah.
And I think... they're going to land on a planet.
Yeah.
And maybe they're going to get captured and they have to, like, make their way out.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll probably be easier. Who knows? Maybe it's harder getting out than the asteroid.
Maybe.
Who knows? Maybe it's because they said nobody's escaped. Or maybe somebody did escape. They're lying, like, about the ship that nobody's escaped so that they don't have hope or anything.
All right. I think next week's show is going to be very different from this week's show.
Yes.
This week's show is very action packed and pew, pew, pew. I don't know that we're going to get a lot of that. I think next week's show is going to be
cruising through, discovering.
Yeah. I think next week's show is going to be a lot of explaining, you know, like,
yeah.
Because now that the Janeway hologram has been activated, she's got to introduce herself. I think she's probably going to give us the history of the protostar, why they're out there, and the crew is going to have to decide how much they're going to listen to her and how much they're going to pay attention. And there'll probably be some problem that they have to explore. Also, at some point, I don't know if it's going to happen in this next episode, I think Gwen is going to have to stop being the hostage and just become a part of the crew.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Because in like the logo or something, she's not all trained up.
Yeah, she's just standing there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So, you know, and the thing is we watched Gwen a lot in this episode. While she was doing the bad things her dad wanted her to do, she didn't seem like she enjoyed it.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, so I think Gwen is probably a good person. She was just with a crappy parent, you know, with a bad parent.
Yeah.
And I think she's going to find her own way. And probably find out that her dad is not the best of people and she doesn't need to be following what he says because it's not right. So, all right, Jude. Well, I think that's going to be it for our very first episode of Murph's Turf, because we're talking all about Star Trek Prodigy. Jude, thanks for joining me on this, man. I'm super excited to get to do this with you.
Yeah.
Shows come out on Thursday, Prodigy does, and we'll try to record and get these out as close to that as we possibly can. But, you know, some of that just depends on school
Thursday.
And sports and all that other stuff.
How about Friday?
Maybe Friday. We'll get it out as soon as we can.
Yeah.
We'll do it. But you guys, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to us on all the podcasting platforms out there. We will be on them just as soon as we possibly can. It just takes them sometimes a little bit longer to approve everybody. Until next time, guys, thanks for joining us. This is Murph's Turf, signing off.